the ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 301. And joining me is little Stevie V, BM, and little Peter H. There we are, lads. You're right.
All right. Have you got like initials, like share prices and stuff?
Yeah, I should say PHG and Steve MG.
Mm, I like that.
Yeah, because the G stands for... okay, so listen, I've been married for a week. Thanks for coming, Pete. Pete didn't turn up in the end. I thought he was going to turn up, make a surprise entrance. In fact, I don't want a surprise entrance from you. Thanks very much.
The last thing you need on your wedding day.
And I've got to say, I quite enjoyed it. Steve, did you enjoy it?
I was aching for days after for dancing so much.
Yeah, well, I've got to thank you for the music. And I've got to say, Pete, Steve turned into a professional drunken sex pest.
Ah, good.
he was. He came up to me and Megan at one point, right? And I don't know if I should say exactly what he said. But he's standing there, worse for wear, saying, basically, explained that he was quite excited down below. That's what he said. In the way he said that, quite drunk. And so we both looked down. He said, don't look down there. I thought, well, what do you want us to look? And Megan even said to me, Megan knows Steve quite well. She said to me, at one point, she mouthed the word, don't leave me with him.
I don't actually remember saying that at all.
I know. And Single Steve, they called him, but he was trying to get his end away. Wow, he was like the dog on heat there. Literally turned around, he's on someone's leg going like crazy, you know?
I'm going to be honest, that's one of the reasons I didn't come.
I think Steve did.
Yeah. I'll set him up and knock him down.
But yeah, I was dancing. At one point, you know when you have to stop dancing because you're sweating like a maniac? I was sweating like a nutter there. And right. I thought, I can't, this is a hired suit. I can't take it back dripping sweat. But and I looked at the collar. Do you know what? Because Megan, for a month beforehand at least, she's been going on the sunbeds, having sessions on the sunbeds. And I thought, I can't have wedding pictures looking pasty and white and her looking really tanned. So literally, it's not the good time to experiment with sun cream, fake tan. But I saw it in the bathroom cupboard. It's like Saint-Tropez. Tan mousse, and I thought I'll put a bit of this on, and all of a sudden I only started putting it on the top part of my face, and it's getting really dark. I thought, oh no, and I started panicking a bit. I thought I'd look like an African from the nose up, and I thought she may not even recognise me, so I was literally panicking. So but I did manage to get a moisturiser and smooth it round, and that's nice, Pete. Do you know, I asked Pete to put his profile picture on Skype so I can see who I'm dialing here, and he's had a passport picture himself. That's nice there.
Yeah, literally from my passport.
Yeah, how was the wedding you went to anyway, Peter?
Awesome. It may have been the best wedding I've ever been to.
Come on, was it any good?
It was brilliant. No, it was good fun. It was a good laugh. Family and friends and people and all the usual, just dancing and all that stuff. Yeah. It was the first time at a wedding I felt quite old. Because the people getting married were late sort of 20s. And so a lot of the guests were all that kind of age. I was like, wow, I felt like their granddad a bit.
Which is interesting. I see England were lucky last night against Fiji, weren't they, in the World Cup?
You don't want to peak too soon, just.
It was hard for them though, wasn't it? In the last 20 minutes they started pulling away. But
yes.
When did Wales play?
Without Mike Brown, we'd have been stuffed.
So we got, hang on, look at the next thing. It's Tonga versus Georgia, next fixture. It's kicked off. That's that there, it's done. Ireland, Canada, Russia, Japan, France, Italy today. It's a Saturday. Tomorrow, Samoa, USA. Wales tomorrow. And who are they playing?
Uruguay.
Yeah. Who are they playing, Steve?
Uruguay. I said it wrong, sorry.
Uruguay.
Uruguay.
Wales versus Uruguay.
Uruguayla.
Cool. Mind. So, Steve, let's talk about stocks and shares. Let's ignore anything else that's not important. Let's talk about stocks and shares. First of all, let's have a market roundup from Pete. Pete, what do you think the market's been going like this week? Any good?
I'll tell you what I've been looking at more, and it's thanks to your podcast, really, is getting more into sort of the small caps and the little and the penny stocks, because that is interesting. I haven't really been looking at the main market that much and looking at the big lumbering kind of dividend paying stocks, which are kind of just depressing at the moment, aren't they, a little bit, unless you've got lots of money to invest. Steve, put your money in there now. But the small caps and all of the sort of hype around the SEB resources and all that has been very interesting. And that's what I've been listening to your podcast and been reading up on that. I've got a few questions about that.
Good, good. Well, Steve, now you started off with a virtual portfolio. Now you've got $5,000 to invest. You set up an account. Have you invested any of it yet?
I have, yes.
In what?
I've been having great fun this week. It's really good fun, this share stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, Steve, once you get into it, buddy, you know, you won't look back. What are you invested in?
So I put £1,000 into Royal Dutch Shell. Mm-hmm. And at one point, I was £18 up.
All right.
All right, come on.
So, but you know what that is, Steve? Listen, the backbone of my portfolio is Royal Dutch Shell, right? And I've got a big chunk of money in that. And that's for the rest of my life. That'll pay now a nice income on dividends alone. And it's around about 16 quid a share, aren't they? So I can see them doubling in the next 5 years on capital appreciation. So I believe you will double your money on the capital appreciation. Plus, in the meantime, you'll be getting regular dividends. So you'll be getting more shares. And so I think, you know, over time, you've picked the right level here. So you're not going to be rich off that. But when you retire, you'll be getting a nice little income off that. You know, you can start taking cash if you want, if you need it, or just keep, you know, piling it up for your...
How can you be so confident that it'll be double?
Do you know what? Because it happens. It's cyclical. It happens every time. You're seeing what's going on. I banged on about... Do you know, I was listening to Tony Manini, who had it on the podcast, from Asia Met, and he was talking about the copper price, and he said, you know, it happens every time. We see the price of commodities get hammered. Big major producers like Glencore at the moment with copper, you know, they're shutting down mines, and you think, well, hang on a sec, the demand is still growing for oil, for copper. And what happens is, a couple of years down the road, when economies start turning around again, they're almost scrambling to open mines back up, and it takes like 2-3 years to get them going again. And there's a huge supply, you know, drought basically, and so it happens over, and that's the way things work. I mean, it's silly really, because it's boom and bust, but that's what will happen. And you know, they wouldn't. I just see that happening. I mean, you look at the, you know, Royal Dutch share price, it goes up and down like that, and with the oil price. But also, what happens is, in these, you know, bottom of cycle situation, is these companies become more efficient because they really cut the dead wood off, you know. And then when the oil price goes back up, they start earning profits, or their margins become bigger than they've ever been before because they're more efficient. And so at the moment, it's a good time to invest because we're at the bottom of the cycle. And so there's only one way it'll go. You know, it may go along the bottom for a couple of years. Is. But while that's happening, especially with dividend stocks like Royal Dutch Shell, you're accumulating, you know, shares. So
but being so specific as saying like a time frame of 5 years and doubling is just your kind of hope.
Yeah. No, well, for example, I've read a couple of reports on Bloomberg this week, and one of them was about, you know, shale players in America. This is where the producing boom came from, really, because they're up to their necks in debt because their business models are based on a barrel of oil being $90 or $60. Even though they can pull out the ground quite cheaply, they're highly financed, you know, and so they need to get a high price for this. And so International Energy Agency said it's the biggest drop in supply from North America will happen next year since, I think, 2009, something like that. It'll be a big drop in supply next year. It may not pass through to the prices straight away, but there will be this issue. And listen, nobody wants low oil prices. It's not a benefit to anyone. None of the producers want it.
Well, consumers like it.
Yeah, but do you know what? They don't have a say. All they do is consume. They don't have a say in the production of it, you know. So it will. It's cyclical, but you know, like I said, Royal Dutch Shell is one of the biggest. It's at the moment, it's an interesting situation happening. They know they're taking over BG for billions of pounds, which is a huge, you know, natural gas, liquid natural gas.
And the Aussies are putting their ore in, aren't they?
The Aussies, yes. So it's been passed in every country, pretty much. This takeover bid has been passed in most countries, even America. There are only two countries left, China and Australia. Now, Brazil has even passed it, which matters a lot because BG has some massive reserves there. But the Aussies have said, listen, this may reduce competition. And so they put off their decision until November. So we'll see what happens. But I think that even if it doesn't go through, that's not such a bad thing, because it's quite an expensive thing. And I think you may even see the price of Royal Dutch Shell go up, even if... But I can't see Australia standing in the way, you know, regulars of Royal Dutch Shell, because, like I said, they are an industry. They're huge, massive. And I think they'll you know, have dialogue over it, and it'll work out in the end. But I think, Steve, it's a good call. So you're Royal Dutch Shell, and...
Do you know the other thing I've been obsessed with? I actually called Pete this week for some advice on it.
ASX.
It was good advice, actually. You know, I'm obsessed by the buy limits. It's a buy sell. So, I know an order. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, well, right. All different kinds of orders you can place. You can place limit orders, trailing orders.
So basically, I was trying to basically get the price when it just kind of spikes below and then grab that price.
Yeah, so
and then
a limit order. You can do that. If you look at the chart, you can see there's a support level. In fact, let me get a chart of a roller shell. You can see it'll hit certain levels and bounce back up. And I think the lowest ever been when I was camping. And it was peeing down with rain, the markets are crashing down around, and in fact it felt like the heavens are falling in as well. I remember, I think I had one in and ordering it I think the last one I bought was £15.75, I think it went to touch, because I had orders in every 25 pence. I've stopped buying now Royal Dutch Shell actively, so I haven't got enough money in my account because I've got money elsewhere. But now, I think next week is the first big dividend payment I'll get from Royal Dutch Shell, so that'll do now. I don't need to buy anymore.
The fact you were camping wasn't relevant there, was it?
No, but I felt like, the biggest crash we've had for a while, and the heavens had opened. It felt almost like, you know, the financial markets had conspired with the Lord God above in the heavens to say, I'm going to rain down on everyone, including the financial markets.
Welsh man camping.
Yeah, that idiot who decided it's a good idea to go camping in the rain.
Right. But
I remember that was the day that they hit their low. That's what I'm saying. I think they went down to just below £15.75. It may test that again, you know, but I'm happy now just accumulating on the dividend. So you've got that. Yeah, there's all different ways to place orders. You can place even trailing orders, Steve. So that means if you're a momentum buyer, you can say, I'll place a trailing order, which means you put a pound or trailing order in. That means it'll hit the low, and then you won't buy until it bounces a pound off its lowest point in the last, say, 31 days, depending how far you can set the order in for.
The way that works is if the price is going down, it doesn't buy at a guess price. As soon as it starts coming up, it then buys.
My advice to Steve, though, was that when you're looking at a company the size of Shell, at this current sort of state, it's not going to be massive difference in the long run whether it's £16.20 or £16.10 in a company that size.
Yeah, it's not. And do you know what? We're talking about this. This is a stock for me that I'll hold for 20 years, you know? Yeah. And I'm saying we're buying now at historic lows, which is very good. So don't worry about a couple of, you know, almost 50 pence here or there or 20 pence here or there, because it doesn't matter in the middle. I mean, you know, it may dip a bit, but I can see now, right on the 16 quid mark, it's close up at £15.99. That's a bargain. 1 pence off £16, so close with that.
I didn't take. I actually took pizza. I didn't take. I did take Pizza Vice, and I kind of just bought Royal Dutch Shell in the end. I'm now playing the orders on Asian Mets. So I've put in a £1. Sorry, Is it one p? 1.4p and a 1.5p.
Okay, is that where they? Yeah, yes. Well,
so they're just over 1.5. I think.
This is what I did. You buy anything else?
I looked into AutoTrade and I was chatting to people about this, but it just doesn't look good at the moment. I don't know.
I was driving back. I just dropped my kids off with the mother-in-law up the M3 right there. I just dropped them off the M3 there. Hopefully she'll pick them up. But I was thinking, Steve, do you know what I should do? This is what I think you should do. Have three dividend-paying stocks, right, that are bankers for the rest of your life. And I see that as being like spread across sectors, big stocks. These are basically buy and forget stocks, right? And I'm thinking this is now Royal Dutch Shell, GlaxoSmithKline and Lloyds Bank. Put them £1,000 in each, leave them there, right?
Oh, do you know, I've done that on Lloyds actually. I put a buy in at £1.70. So as soon as it drops
70 pence now.
Sorry, I'm getting confused now. 70 pence. Yeah,
right. Yeah, you can get carried away. You can miss the order, mind. Steve getting very technical now. So I'd honestly go with, for you, right? GlaxoSmithKline, they're at all time low. Apparently, the pipeline of drugs are coming through next couple of years. They are saving billions. And the pipeline of drugs coming through, because it's all about the drugs they're selling at the moment. And they've got about 40 coming through in the next few years, which will help them. They're at an historic low. They pay an excellent dividend. And like I said, they're a 200-year-old company or something ridiculous. And you've got a stalwart of the stock market, and you've got Lloyds. Those three there, you can chuck in your back pocket there for the rest of your 20 years, pretty much now. You're fine. Then, I think the last £2,000, you should put in four penny stocks, right? And these are the penny stocks that I recommend. I don't recommend. I'm not offering investment advice. I'm just saying, base your research on these, okay?
Just do it. I mean, research it.
You mentioned one. Let me just... Sorry, I don't know. I'm in my office and I had to turn the heater on. It's getting too hot and I'm starting to sweat. So I mentioned one, Asian Met, right? These are guys with a fantastic track record. They've got a cracking reserve of copper in KSK in Indonesia there. But this guy's taken, like I said, from 3 million to 6 billion. He's doing it again. He's saying, you know, this is the perfect time in the bottom of the cycle to start investing. And he's talking about creating immense value for shareholders. And I believe he will. I believe this will be... because they've got an even bigger reserve, 4 or 5 times as big as the one they're working on at the moment. But I think this would be a minimum 10 bagger. I think that, honestly. So I'd put, because you've got £2,000 left, I put £500 into that. I'd put £500 into Seb Resources as well, because you've got Dave Whitby as well. In fact, just sent me a Skype text today saying, because I had a meeting on in the week, said, sorry, you couldn't make it. So we had a cracking talk with all private investors. His intention is to create, you know, a huge, a big company from this company's at the moment. And the market cap is at under 10 million. And I see that in the next 3 to 5 years getting to 50 to 100 million. I mean, I think he's talking about doing that. So that's a good play. And also, very much like Metal Tiger, had Paul Johnson, the executive director, on from those guys. They're very... Do you know what? The main guy, Jim, there, Terry Kramer, has had something like 400 baggers. He's a geologist, and literally, he's, you know, amazing.
And an incredible beard as well.
He's got, yeah, incredible beard. And this is where you should look at the management of companies completely, because these guys know their stuff. You know, you're talking about professional people who've worked in big industry, you know, companies, huge, massive, you know, international players, but they're now going sort of alone and starting again on their own. They know what they're doing. You know, it's basically like having, you know, one of the best coaches in the world go down to your local sports team and say, okay, guys, and, you know, going through a proper regime of fitness and diet and everything with you from a world-class level, you know? They know what they're doing. I like the Metal Tiger, Asian Met, Seb Resources. And the fourth one, I think, has huge potential. Now, I'm chatting to the guy on Tuesday on the podcast. He's in Perth. I'm actually getting at 4 o'clock in the morning to talk to him. That's 88 Energy. They're drilling in their Ice Wine project in Alaska. And there's a potential there for 500 million barrels of oil. And everywhere around them, surrounding them, there's been oil strikes everywhere. And where they're drilling, I mean, it's been flagged up by a guy called Paul... I can't think of his name, but the guy who did the sort of geology reports for this, he found the Eagle Ford play in American Texas, and that is like a million barrel a day reserve. And no one else, all his colleagues doubted him, said, no, there's no oil there. It's like a pincushion, and it's been drilled loads of times. He said, nothing, there is, trust me. And there's now one of the biggest, you know, oil players in America. And so there's 1,000 rigs there going at one time. And so he thinks in Alaska there's oil at this place. And this is happening right now. So it's 88 Energy, Seb Resources, Asian Met, and Metal Tiger. And the Metal Tiger hasn't moved. It hasn't gone down recently. And I think they're a 3 million cap company. And they've got 3 pretty much direct projects that are involved in drilling. And they also invest in equities in the resource sector. And I think this is an excellent play on, say, medium term, because we are at the bottom of the cycle. And I think these guys are so undervalued at the moment, just 3 million market cap. And I just think, you know, there's huge value there. So that's what I'd do. If that was me, Steve, I'd have a grand in Rothschild, grand in GSK, grand in Lloyds, forget about it, they'd be paying dividends for the rest of the time. And that there's the backbone. Then you can have a bit of a fun with, you know, volatile penny stocks with huge potential. And they should do completely outperform those dividend-paying stocks. But there you've got a sort of little balanced portfolio of sensible against, you know, fun. That's what I'm saying. What do you think, Pete?
Yeah, absolutely. And it leads into kind of what I was going to ask about today, because like I said earlier, I'm kind of getting more into sort of small penny stocks because they are more exciting, let's be honest, and interesting. But I'm also conscious of, you know, doing your own research and getting an understanding. And like Warren Buffett says, you know, you must, you know the company. You must kind of get to know the company, understand what you're investing in and not just go on the hype. Mm-hmm. And all these guys, all those companies you mentioned, they all talk a great game. And I can see the track records, fantastic. It's all very, it all sounds very positive, but you've got to look deeper than that. And so my question was to you, how do you then start, apart from listening to them and understanding the story, what are the fundamental things that you look at, like on the balance sheet, that will then help you sort of decide whether it's worth investing.
Well, this is where filters come in handy, or even just have a set an account on ADVFN. Like, I have a filter, right? And yes. on the filters, let me just grab one here.
You've mentioned that before, and like in the blog last week, you were talking, I think it was about Metal Tiger, and talking about liquidity and there's sort of indicators. But
yeah,
can you sort of run through for me and for Steve and other people that perhaps are liking the idea of investing in people like Seb, but I feel they're not, you know, well versed enough to actually to make that step.
So yes. So do you know what? Essentially, I like of those four companies I mentioned. Now, this is not a hard and fast rule, but I like to look for companies, like I said, with not many shares in issue, because they're not too much of a baggy supply of shares. And so you can, you know, there are companies with a huge amount of shares in issue, and I like to look for companies below. In fact, I just had someone email me saying, "What do you think of XTR, or Extract Resources?" And they've got cracking potential. I've not done a huge amount of research on them because they have over a billion shares in supply. That doesn't mean they won't do phenomenally well. They may do, you know, but you have to set your limits somewhere. And the research I've done, and the big companies that have been big movers recently, like African Potash, Seb Resources and all that, they still have a long way to go, I believe. They have under a billion shares in circulation. Extract Resources have 8 billion. So it's, you know, it takes a lot more to sway that price, because you see at the moment, a big buyer came in on Seb on Friday. All right?
That's 33 million shares.
Yeah, and Adrian, his name is.
Hi, Adrian.
That shifted the price. Yeah, Adrian, I know, I follow him on Twitter, he follows me. And that shifted the price. And because at the moment, Seb now have a loyal, you know, core of followers that hold stock and that long-term holders. And so there's not a lot of huge supply out there, you know. So when someone comes up and buys a big chunk of that, it's basically taking the supply out of the market. And you know, market makers can't find any more to buy and sell. So they have to push the price up. And so obviously that share becomes in more scarce, basically, so that pushes the price up.
That's another sort of question I have on the whole volatility of these penny stocks, where at the moment Seb obviously has got some good news flow, there's lots of, I'm not saying hype, but you know, there's a lot of buzz about it, and so a lot of people will be interested in earning a few quid on it now, investing. They're not going to have like good news every single week now for months and years to come. It's going to be a long timeline for them to actually develop their business. But you've got that, like that guy there, okay, long-term investor. But a lot of people are going to be sort of short-term, won't they? Take some profits.
So yeah, they will. You sell all the
share price. It's easy to do. Oh, it's 1.2. You know, we're up 25% today. Or whatever. I'll dive in there, or not. You know, whatever. You kind of feel like you're missing it, but it's actually to sit tight and actually believe that in weeks or months to come, it's probably going to come off a bit, isn't it? It's going to come down because
it will come off a bit, yes. But I mean, you know, like I said, I believe in the story. I've spoken to Dave lots of times. He's kept up a dialogue with me, the CEO. Really nice guy, down to earth, and what you see is what you get, you know?
Yes.
And I honestly believe he wants to build a big company here, or not a, you know, I'm not saying he's going for a $1 billion cap company, but I think he's going for almost, you know, 100 million market cap, right about that level, you know? And he did say to me,
and what are they currently, like 5 or something?
They are 8 million, yeah. So there's a 10 bagger, and I think anything 50 plus, you know, he's looking at least. And he said he's going to keep plugging, because he's got a little bit, he's got a, you know, a plan there that he's going to do, and he's going to go keep, you know, plugging away at it for years, he said.
So
and,
if you were going to, if you were, done your research, you decided you want to go into Seb like this week or something, or soon, or would you then put in a limit? What's it? What did it close on Friday? Something like 1 point.
It's sort of said. It's hard. You know, I bought on a pullback. I was lucky to buy it, and literally it was like almost 2-3 weeks ago, and it pulled back to about I think 0.67. I bought. You can see it pull back, and I bought that little dip that one day. It was called a hammerhead, basically. The little candle of the chart came down. I bought there, and since then it rocketed. In fact, not Friday, just gone, the Friday before, and it rocketed Friday as well, just gone yesterday. So now it literally, it did touch, it almost doubled my money in just under a couple of weeks. But yeah, you're gonna have pullbacks every now and again, but if you look at almost like the penny mark, you know, you could set up a little price level just below, and it always never dips. So if you set it, say, point you know, it's hard to say. You know, do you want to miss out on it? I don't know, but I mean, it's hard to say. But you know, all stocks go up and down, up and down. I think SEB will continue to go up, but you'll have, of course, it'll have pullbacks. But it's, you have to be watching and waiting for it, you know, to pull back. So,
but like, if you put a buy order in at say a penny now,
yeah, put a limit order in a penny, yes. You can set that for. I'm with Barclays. I know you can set that for 31 days. I think trading days, so it'll be good for that 31 days. If it doesn't get filled, it just expires. You have to reset it. But I mean, it's a good chance it'll come back to a penny. Who knows? You know, there's always volatility. I mean, it went down. You know, literally on Friday, it was down by a couple of percent, and then it ended up 17%.
Yeah,
so it's very volatile in intraday trading penny stocks. And that's also the thing I'd say is don't get. You know, people do take profits early. Yes. There's an old saying, let your winners run. Let them run. If you believe in the story, let them run. Don't keep taking a bit of profit here and there.
There's not going to be good news or lots
of
news.
Oh, there is. Yeah, I mean, there is because, I mean, they're about to announce, Dave hasn't come out with the assets yet. And a lot of people say there should be a statement out this week, maybe, or next week, detailing the assets that he's going for, you know, because he hasn't really detailed them.
Can you explain that? What does that mean?
Well, basically, they've got they're looking at certain oil fields and gas fields in Indonesia, and I did ask what's the size of these, and he said at the moment he said about 500 barrels of oil a day, so you can do the math on that, you know, and work out, and that's all that is first. It's a bit like Asia Met. What they're doing first of all is to get some money, revenue, cash flow coming in, you know, so it's not going to be a huge money maker straight away. But that cash flow is needed then to build, to go to the next oil field. And obviously he wants to keep doing this along the way, keep oil field after oil field after oil field. At the moment, there are a lot of distressed, you know, players out there in the oil market who are selling assets cheap, you know. So, and a lot of times, he said people have approached him because they know what they're doing, and they'll say, you know, can you help us get this oil or gas out? Now, it's talking about gas, and there's a gas pipeline. And he's also talking about, he said, what you can do, and this is... It needed is basically get the gas and then turn that into electricity and put power into the grid, which they'll pay for. And he says, it's quite easy to do. I can do it. He says, there's a gas pipeline 12 kilometres away from the field they're at the moment, which is not a lot for him. He said, our team is quite capable of doing that, of linking the gas up to the pipeline and all that stuff. We can do that. And so it's supplying gas and you get oil as well coming out of that. So, you know, so yeah, so he's you know, going to do this at several different sites, you know. So the first one, he hasn't really announced the exact detail of what will be produced out of this field. So the next bit of news will be, you know, they'll be saying exactly, oh, we're going to be producing about this amount of, you know, barrel of oil equivalent or whatever, or this is the size of the asset, depending. And then, because I think it was... They've had I think they're looking at about six different kinds of they've had offers, because they've had people offering them, because they're, you know, like I said, it's all low oil price. Some people are a bit struggling there, and David's team are world class.
At this low oil price, they're still happy.
They're still profitable. Still profitable. Even I was talking to Tony Manini, you know, from Asia Met, and he was saying even though, you know, the price of copper has been hammered, you can still sell it for two. I don't know what the metric was, but he can make it. Yeah, it's still profitable. $1. I think he's making $1 per pound or something like that, on every pound. And, you know, and it, literally, I said to him, so essentially, you'll be turning over on this field alone, your turnover will be $45 million. He said, sorry, pounds it was. He said, yes. And they're a market cap of like under 10 million. And so that's even on 10% margin, which is probably more than that. I said, so you'd be earning a profit of about 4.5 million. And, you know, that's what they
market. Is that what we call a value gap?
Yeah, and that's pretty much not far from what the whole company is valued at. So it's in 1 year profit, and typically you'll get, you know, shares being valued on, you know, a low PE 10 times. So, you know, you could say they're essentially on that one area, they should be worth, 45 million market cap. You know, really, if you're on 10 times thing, and that's on a margin of... So literally, they are at least four to five times they should go up just on this field alone, on this copper resource alone. That's not including the other one. It's four or five times as big as the one they're looking at. And these are guys who can get it out of the ground and know the markets very well. They know the capital markets. They can, you know, access funding. These are not people who are new to it, have no idea what they're talking about. They can completely go through from exploration to production to selling it on. You know, they know what they're doing. So it's just getting it done, you know. So so you can see that's where, if everything goes to plan. I kept saying to Tony, what's, you know, so where's the bad news here? I don't see what the problem is. And like, it's just people question that it can be done. But I mean, this is a guy who worked for Rio Tinto, you know, the biggest, one of the biggest, second biggest miner in the world,
yep,
for 14 years. He's not wet behind the ears, you know, he knows what he's doing. So yeah, it's just building. I mean, like I said, there will be news out with Seb talking about the assets and the detail of it. Yeah, so you know, it carries on. So anyway, but also I look at, so you say what I look at. I look at quick assets, quick ratio. So quick ratios work. Let me just get the exact. So I'm looking at Seb now, and they fit my filter, and they've got a quick ratio of 8.74. Now, normally, if you've got a 1, that means, I'll read it out. Quick ratio is a company's ability to repay short-term creditors out of its most liquid assets. And the quick ratio is a result of dividing the total current assets other than... Basically, you know, if they can cover it by 1, they're pretty much fine. You know, they can cover the short-term creditors out of their most liquid assets. I mean, straight away, quickly, they can sell assets and cover their creditors.
Bit now, like dividend cover. On
pretty much, yeah. But Seb has got that times 8, you know. And I don't look for companies below 1. Right. And Seb has got, you know, 700 million shares in issues, that's below a billion. And you find even, you know, African Potash and Asia Met have all got these, are all under a billion. They all can cover their assets quite well. And so people ask me about stocks, you know, it's like Extract, for example. And I tell them, it's not in my filter. I haven't done that much research on it because, you know, you're going to have too many companies to look at, you know, and I think you have to restrict them a little bit. But the biggest performers recently, like African Potash, all sit within my filter. So I think, you know, that's a good thing. So any other questions?
None from me.
Steve. None from me, no.
So what are you going to do, Steve?
What, today?
Yeah, anything. What are you going to buy?
Well, funny enough, I was already looking into... is it Metal Tiger?
Yeah,
Metal Tiger. So I was already looking into them this week after listening to your podcast. But yeah, I've just written down those penny stock shares. I'm going to look into them and do a bit of research this week.
Well, do you know what? Last weekend, my father and my friends came down. My brother and all that came down, and we went to a local pub. They were most of them half cut. My father wasn't; he had some drink. But I said to my father, I recommended two stocks, and I said, Dad, I quite like these companies, Seb and Asia Met. He said, put some money in for me then. And he's like, and I told Paul, my mate, he's got a bit of money, and I told my brother, who's got a bit of cash, and they dismissed it. And Paul said, I'm not getting into penny stocks and all that stuff. And my father now is like 45% up on Seb and about 20% up on Asia Met. You know, I said, and that's just a week ago, you know, something like that. I said, well, you know, there we are. So do you know what? I think sometimes it's not the size of the company. You can't judge the quality of a company based on the size. Like, you can have world class management in a small company. It's just, and that is the difference between a rubbish penny stock and one that will, you know, drive growth for years and years. Like, you've got to listen to the guys over. And if it, you know, Dave and Tony Manini and Metal Tiger guys have been saying the same thing over and over again for the last, you know, year or so. They are, or 6 months, the story hasn't changed. They intend on creating value for shareholders by growing the company.
I suppose then the only other thing to challenge is to then look at what are the potential pitfalls, what could go wrong.
Yeah, well, there's loads of things that could go wrong, isn't there? I mean, while I like Metal Tiger as well, it's quite, you know, they've got a diversified portfolio. They've got their own, you know, they're all in the resources sector, yes. But they have, you know, holdings in three big holdings in three different companies. And they've also got, you know, interest in Spain, in Thailand, and where else? Tanzania, I think it was. So, you know, they've got, they're quite diversified. So if one goes down, it's not a big problem. And they're only a market cap of 3 million. I think, what, really? And there's such a, you know, a professional outfit. I mean, if you look at even just, I know anyone can knock up a website, but you can look at certain websites and they're rubbish. But it's a professional looking website. They, you know, they're always open with investors.
I wouldn't use that as a basis.
No, but you know what? I've looked at companies' websites.
Quite a good website.
I know, but I've looked at companies' websites and they've spent no money on it whatsoever. And I think, do you know what? And almost sometimes you can get a inkling. It's like, this company is not spending any money on this, and it's that's the most public face of the company, pretty much, isn't it? I always go to a company's website, always, to check them out and read and see how up to date it is, and whether they care about investors and what information they're giving out to investors. And Metal Tiger completely care. They're really open to asking questions.
I did like Twitter, the guy, you know, that you had on the podcast. It wasn't the top guy, was it? But it was a really good interview.
Paul Johnson, executive director, yes, and you really know, good. for, you know, an excellent record himself. He's a private investor, you know, who's highly qualified. He's done really well. So he had, Mariana Resources, I think it was. He bought them at 3 pence or something like that. They went to 52 pence. And
yeah.
So he's been doing, you know, investing in resource companies for a long time, 20 years. He knows his stuff. And I think it's all about the management, these guys, in small companies. You've got to look at the management, you know. So that's what I think, anyway. But listen, it's just opinion, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. But, and it's your opinion that counts.
Exactly. So what's your plans for the weekend, lads, apart from, you know, kissing and cuddling with each other?
There's not much time left after that.
Yeah, there's not, is there?
No. Mm. I think I might watch a bit of rugby.
Yeah. What are you going to watch, though?
They're not cracking games, are they? Yeah. Ireland thrashing Canada, probably.
Yeah.
Uruguay beating Wales.
What do you think of the opening ceremony? I just thought that wasn't much after much, was it really?
It was a sort of low-budget Olympic effort, wasn't it?
Yeah, but part of me thought, why bother?
Yeah. You
know, unless you're going to be phenomenal, like the Chinese, and have a billion people in a stadium banging drums, you know, or I don't know, then just get on with the rugby, yeah? There's no harvest. They're the big thing, big rugby ball-shaped object in the middle of the pitch with cover on it. I wonder what that is. And they pull the covers off it. It's a rugby ball! Yeah. Hey! Wow!
Right.
And, I just thought, yeah, crack on with it, lads. And I don't know, a bit rubbish, I thought. But there we are. At least you didn't lose to Fiji. It was close, though, you know.
What, 34 points?
Yeah, ignore the points.
Four tries, bonus point.
That's all we need. All right.
Win ugly.
Yeah, lovely. All right, then. So, Steve, what's the advice you should give any person listening to this podcast?
Always do your own advice before you invest. Do not listen to us, because we don't always get it right.
You can't even talk by the sounds of it.
Do your own research.
Do your own advice.
Do your own advice. Do your own pundits.
Okay. You know what I'm on about.
Steve, have you had any more contact with that bird of yours?
No.
Have you found anyone else?
No.
I'm not surprised that you're a crack. I'm surprised for that, because your chat up lines are cracking.
I thought so. I genuinely cannot remember saying that.
I wouldn't use that one for you know, your next date. That's probably what happened on your second date, Steve, isn't it? Yeah.
Did you get lucky at the wedding there, Steve?
No, I couldn't turn his wife.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Anyone else?
No.
His mum?
Yeah. She was luckily she went to bed early. She was heckling me and Gavin, and she was drunk, and I said in the end, ma'am, listen, we're gonna call security if you carry on. And I said I leaned across when Gavin was talking, best man in the speech, which was a cracking speech. I said, ma'am, listen, let him talk, yeah? And she said to me, I was halfway through my speech, and she said, boring. I felt like hitting her.
Well, I love that.
I was really concerned, though, because before the wedding, she was asking me for tight advice. And she was like saying, Steve thinks they're nice. I'm wearing them because Steve thinks they're nice. I haven't got a clue about tights.
You liar, Steve. You're always wearing a pair of tights.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah. All right, lads. Have a nice weekend.
You too.
And you.
Speak soon. So, Steve, this time next week, I expect to see you having your full stock, full portfolio of stocks, yeah?
I will. I definitely will.
Don't mess around with limits too much, because look at the long-term thing. Obviously, people worry about short-term, to a certain example. And you can see, you know, especially with Royal Dutch Shell and GlaxoSmithKline and Lloyd's to a lesser extent, they are at lows, you know. And I think if you're thinking 5-10 years down the line, that's fine.
Mm. It's more the penny stock shares. I'm now looking into that, to be honest.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. It's good you're doing that. Never, in fact, just sometimes just place a limit order and forget about it, because sometimes you can chase and get emotionally involved and you can overpay. Never chase the price on spikes, because that's when people start losing money, you know. So, but I think even with those, there are long term, you know, stories there, you know. But it's nice to get it pulled back like I did, because now when it flies, you're instantly in profit, which is always nice to see. But, you know, here we are. Anyway, listen, I'm boring myself. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.